NewsWI.com.
The Devil's Advocates, never personal, only politics.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Hump Day Edition. Rolling through the happier happy hour, never selling out. We got the finest of guests. He is former U.S. Attorney James Santel. He is the host of his own fine program, Saturday mornings, Morning Cannolis, 9 to 11 a.m. Jim Santel, thank you for sticking around because I feel like I am due a few questions. I'm so domineering.
I will recognize the gentleman in the red hat. Yes.
I realize these paperwork crimes have taken a lot of you and Dom's attention, but there's a very significant coup attempt against the democracy we live in and the vice presidency. And it seems like we're taking our eye off the ball, boys. And here's my point. Jim, that is the more significant crime to my perception. I haven't seen everything, but the public reporting we've seen about the president's lawyers and the different tentacles of this multifaceted coup, Jim, that's what I want history to charge Donald Trump with. Whether or not the man ever does a day in prison, whether or not there is a conviction, whether some jury nullifies the charges against him in this case or another, but I care a lot less relative to the gravity of what I think happened about these other probable crimes that the DOJ has laid out in their filings. It's not that I don't care, Jim. It's that I think we only get one bite at the apple. I think there will only be one prosecution of Donald Trump effectively on a federal level. And if you're going to do it, man, you got to go for the big gig, not the ancillary crimes. My term, counsel.
And I think you're exactly right. And I think that's probably what keeps Merrick Garland up at night. Attorneys general, as we all do, perhaps, think about their places in history. And whether it's 50 years from now or 100 years from now, when your grandchildren are writing about this, and they say, well, gosh, he was a president who was charged and convicted for some document thing, as opposed to it was charged and convicted for trying to overthrow the government, that makes a difference, absolutely. And so I think your point is well taken. It does not in any way diminish the fact that crimes were in fact committed plainly in Mar-a-Lago and in transit from the White House down there. And one of the options, again, that Merrick Garland would have, for example, were to not mothball this for a while, but as January 6th, as your advocacy takes hold, and he does, in fact, put together an indictment as to January 6th events and electors events and coordination with some of these groups events, all of that sort of thing, makes that the cornerstone of a major indictment. You can always still add two or three counts to that. It doesn't have to be intimately related factually or in terms of the narrative. You could add to that major indictment a couple accounts based upon these documents in Mar-a-Lago. You could do other things that are out there, make those maybe secondary, tertiary counts. That's also an option there. I think you're right in the sense that if he does break this up, as I maybe indicated before, he could do procedurally into first indictment, second indictment, third indictment, fourth, then you risk losing, if you will, the American public in the focus of it, which I think is your principal point. And you're no longer playing quite to the history on this. You want to identify those things that are significant. And you happen to have stumbled, my friend, upon something that's in the fundamental rules of federal prosecution, which is you charge the most readily provable, most serious crime out there. That has remained the Department of Justice's approach for as long as I was a part of it. And so Merrick Garland has that right in his inbox as well.
Jim, theoretically, the paperwork crimes, as I continue to call them, the classified documents, while they are substantial crimes, and it appears that the former president is guilty, at least the photographic evidence would seem to indicate. But Jim, if it was effectively a first offense, because as far as I know, Donald Trump's not a convicted felon of any sort, and this is a nonviolent act in the federal courts, I mean, this really would probably be some sort of a negotiated prosecution in some way, shape, or form. Would it not be, Counselor? Could you not see the former president pleading guilty and he'll do no crime and he'll get a slap on the wrist? That's my fear, Jim. is this will come off as something less than serious as a prosecution.
Right. And it goes to something we've talked about before called the sentencing guidelines. And those are numbers quite literally attached to the severity of the crimes with which you've been convicted. You also bring into that things like your prior history, the impact of the crime that you engaged in. And so all of that then is wound up and presented to the judge. We've talked about the scope of the kinds of sentences that can be imposed. Here, I agree with you again that the seriousness of the insurrection counts would carry with them more points, more numbers, if you will, and get him into a higher sentencing guideline range. At the same time, if in fact the department shows, and they're looking at this right now, as Dom and I chatted earlier on this very hour, if it turns out that some of those materials did in fact compromise human intelligence and some of our serious foreign events and engagements overseas, if we have lost our spies overseas as a result of this, that ratchets up the seriousness of this a whole lot and makes a prosecution, even just on those counts, on the paper counts, a whole lot more serious under the sentencing guidelines than would otherwise be. All the more reason why Merrick Garland's got to track down every last aspect of this before he indicts on anything, including the documents out of Mar-a-Lago.
Jim, I'll join you in that asterisk. But otherwise, it's paperwork crimes.
Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. That is James Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours. Thanks for sticking around, Jim. I have so many issues with this. Number one, if I did any of this stuff, I'd be arrested already, right? So let's get to that point. Equal administration under the law, that kind of thing, right? Equal enforcement of law. I mean, so Donald Trump should already be arrested, as far as I'm concerned. Because if it were me, Jim, I have a feeling they would already have arrested me. Do you agree, sir?
I do. I think you would have been with this sort of evidence, you would have been taken into custody. You would probably released on your own recognizance because you're a decent guy otherwise, aside from having committed these offenses here. But you would be. There'd be a criminal complaint put together and probably presented to the indictment, grand jury indictment, sometime within about 30 days. That process would be underway. Again, we are very much attentive to the fact that this is a former president, and so there's a lot of weight given to that.
Should we be, though, Jim? I mean, and this is my point. Should we be? So what if he's the former president? You know what? I mean, really, honestly, so freaking what? What does that have to do with anything? If this is an elected position, you go in, you go out. If you're a former cop and you carry a gun, you're not supposed to carry a gun. It doesn't matter. They'll arrest you. If you're a former surgeon, you're not licensed anymore, but you're still doing surgeries, they'll arrest you. I mean, being former doesn't make you it. So that bothers me. Obviously, Jim, you can tell it bothers me greatly.
And you're being bothered is appropriate. And my comment is simply about one of the factors the attorney general's got to think about in going down this precedented road. But your point is, again, very well taken. Bob Mueller said in the last line of the Mueller report, no one is above the law. That's the way it should be. And I agree with you, in a perfect world where you didn't have to be concerned about an America that's going to respond positively and badly and someplace in between. When this former president is indicted, you didn't have to respond to that. And you know what? In the end, you shouldn't have to. Yeah, right. You're absolutely right. You shouldn't have to respond to that. I've said it before. I'll say it again. The decision not to prosecute because you're concerned about the political implications is as corrupt as a decision to prosecute premised upon politics. And so your point is well taken.
Thank you, Jim. One thing, I'll kick it back to Crudy here for the last few minutes. It seems to me, and we talk about the crimes that have been committed, things are being investigated, that the paperwork crime, these top secret documents, and this particular issue that we're focusing on now, because of course January 6th committee has been meeting, they haven't had any hearings, so this is where we are, and this is of course a big deal because the FBI raided the former president's house. It seems to me that this is the low hanging fruit, the conspiracy and the insurrection. corruption and all those things, it seems more murky than the guy had documents. We wanted them back. He gave us some back. We found out he had more. We wanted them back. They said they gave us everything. They didn't. And da da da. You know. So from a prosecutorial perspective, it seems like this is a slam dunk case. But it's also taken a year and a half to get to this point. Could it take another year for the insurrection investigation, quote unquote, to unfold, that this is all of a sudden the low hanging fruit and the easiest way to keep him off the ballot if he is in fact convicted for this crime?
There's no doubt that the January 6th matter is much more, I'll use the word, expansive, right? You've got so many tendrils out there, so many places, so many things going on, news breaking every day about that. It is a much bigger, fatter file, if you will, that's sitting in Merrick Garland's inbox and continues to grow every day. So that's the challenge of doing all of this. The greater issue then is, again, what timing? How do you sequence these things? And in the end, the other important point that's packed into your question is timing. Let's think about this. That Merrick Garland has a little bit more than 2 years, 20 months, maybe 22 months or so, of his tenure. In January of 2025, he will no longer be the attorney general, depending upon who the next administration is. If you don't charge and you don't convict and you don't get the appeal done and you don't get the Supreme Court review completely done, the department in a new administration could, I'll say it out loud, could dismiss these charges as it did with some certain defendants in the last administration. Now, there'd be an outrage about that, and you'd have to get the right attorney general in there you get the wrong one in there. But the reality is, as long as it's pending, you can still dismiss those charges. And that's why time is of the essence. There's a lot to do in a little bit more than 2 years for Merrick Garland on all of these, including the so-called paper charges and the January 6th thing. This has got to be started sometime in early 2023 to get this nearly completed, if not fully completed, by the end of this term. And again, a Democrat, if Joe Biden is reelected, and that concern goes completely away. If there's a change in administration, that's when we begin to think about, gosh, what could be done legitimately under the law to dismiss charges already brought by a prior administration? That's the additional concern that's in your question, which again is so well articulated here today. It raises this prospect of timing.
Well, let me cast some shade on Dominic's poorly phrased question. It is not the DOJ's job to keep Donald Trump off the ballot. In no way, shape, or form should that ever factor into whether or not he's charged.
That was my personal opinion.
Well, your opinion's wrong in this case.
And you're right. You're right. And, you know, the attorney general's just issued another memorandum somewhat related about politics and officials. You're absolutely right. The Department of Justice, as we've said so many times, should not be guided by partisan politics about who's on the next ballot. It should be guided by what the law says, what the facts prove, and what when you are ready, again, based upon a reasonable doubt standard, to present this to a grand jury, to present this to a trial jury, when you're ready to go ahead, you do it. You don't wait around for illegitimate purposes or just other strategic purposes, and you don't do it just to keep somebody off the ballot. That's presumably somebody else's responsibility, right? Under the 14th Amendment, other procedures there. It's in the back of your mind, but first and foremost, it is about enforcing the law, which is what the chief federal law enforcement officer has got to do as he wrestles with all these things.
Jim Sintel, the former president, is currently leveling, I would call them, daily threats against the democracy. How is it the Department of Justice has not seen fit to go round this guy up and throw him in the clink and hold him until trial? I mean, anyone else making threats that could have the force of getting people killed would probably be charged with a little more alacrity. Or am I wrong, counselor?
Right. You know, we do have the First Amendment out there, but it only goes so far. As we've talked before in connection with January 6th, these other things he is saying recently, undeniably, once again, inciting people who might not otherwise do this to pick up their, I hate to say it, guns, become violent. We know about the Cincinnati event. That's happened already. You're inciting people to do things they wouldn't otherwise do. Your First Amendment right to express your dismay with what the government does, including a search of your own property, only goes so far. It's called fighting words. It's called again, inciting people to violence. And you can make the argument, a very creative or not so creative prosecutor would say, yes, this is too much. Once again, you think long and hard about it just because this is a former president. But then again, should not be the dispositive factor here. Don't want to overemphasize that. And I think it is a part of the deliberation, the discussion that Merrick Garland is having around his conference room table on a regular basis these days.
Jim Santel, leave me time to say goodbye. Thank you so much, Counselor, for joining us on the Devil's Advocates today.
Thank you, Jim. Always a pleasure, gentlemen. Take care.
Have to beat that off.
FBI, open up!
Hey, buddy.
Okay, men, time to be an all-star caregiver. Drive them to physical therapy, doctor's appointments. Be there emotionally and physically. Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Caregiving is tougher than tough. Find care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
They say singing can help you remember things. So here's some tips for parents out there during these tough times.
Number one.
Make sure your kids wash their hands for 20 seconds after they've coughed or sneezed or been outside.
Two.
Virtual play dates. Social and physical distancing can help save lives.
Three.
Tell them they're safe and show your love and pride. Yes, we'll get through this together.
Find out more at coronavirus.gov. A message from the CDC and the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates.
Mitch McConnell did make a public statement, right? After he voted to acquit.
No, nothing says the president can't be prosecuted.
Set the example for your caucus.
Convince your caucus as to why the man is not fit to serve. How do you not use your leadership? Say, you guys, this is crazy. We can't do this, and here is exactly why. Because now, of the two major political parties, one of them is under the thumb of a fascist insurrectionist.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
I'm Kirk Bangstad, and I own the Minocqua Brewing Company in Deep Red, northern Wisconsin, and I have a super PAC. We make good trouble by buying billboards, radio ads, and calls to voters in northern Wisconsin. We target federal and state elections, think Ron Johnson and Tom Tiffany, and concentrate on a fair redistricting process. Give a donation now if you're able at the MinocquaBrewingCompany.com super PAC tab. Help us make the politics of the Northwoods as clean as our lakes and streams. That's the MinocquaBrewingCompany.com super PAC.
COVID-19 vaccines are starting to become available across the country. Now is the time to get informed. Get the latest information at getvaccineanswers.org. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Occupy didn't start on Wall Street. It started on our street. The Devil's Advocates.
I'm gonna fight them all. And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now, 844-967-2789.
Dominic, let me thank our fine guest and good friend, former U.S. Attorney James Santel. If you like the kind of action you've been hearing on this show, you should tune in Saturday mornings for Morning Cannolis. You can hear them all across the Civic Media Network. In the Rapids, in Warsaw, in Waukesha, and right here in Madison on Devil Radio, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11 a.m. And also looking forward to the kickoff of the Badger football season on WFHR. I believe that's a 6:20 kick on Saturday night.
That's this week.
September 3rd.
Oh, Big Ten ball already starts on Saturday.
Awesome. Well, the Badgers are a Big Ten team. Illinois State, I don't think the two teams have ever met before.
Uh-oh.
On the gridiron. So we'll see. 844-967-2789. Corinna from Milwaukee, I believe. Corinna, welcome. What do you got for us?
Hi. I was just sharing an information. I got the letter today from the Board of Pharmacy saying that we have to retrain our pharmacists to make sure that we are releasing medication into different states with effect, which will cause spontaneously abortion or damage of a fetus or whatever it is. So as you know, majority of medications do have that caution. So that is, I think it's just interesting that now, even though our state still have an abortion as is, we have to change what we do with the other states, and it's just very sad situation.
Thank you for your call, Karina. 844-967-27. I wish I understood better. I would try to clarify. 844-967-2789. Doug from Minneapolis. Welcome, Doug. What do you got for us?
Hi, guys. Great show. I really enjoyed the interview with the attorney. It was very not only educational, but illuminating. I tuned in late, and I don't know if you guys touched on Lindsey Graham, what he said the other day. If you did, I don't want to necessarily repeat everything you've already said.
No, not today. Although we had Jim on relatively recently, we might have acknowledged the fact that Lindsey Graham effectively, and I know we did on the show, whether or not we did with Jim Santel, I don't recall clearly because I think we're all in the studio together on Friday, but you go, Doug.
Well, here's how I interpreted what Lindsey Graham said, and I'm a retired 36-year Marine who the people that Lindsey Graham referenced when he was not making a threat in my mind. He was making a promise. That's how I looked at it. And the people that will show up in the streets, the majority of them probably will not have served in the military. They have not pledged to support and defend the Constitution like all of us, you know, after each enlistment, during each enlistment, and all that. And Lindsey Graham basically was throwing a fireball. I think it was not just a threat, but a promise. And I'd like to know what you guys think about that.
Well, I just asked James Santel, the fine former U.S. attorney, our fine guest. It seems to me that Donald Trump's throwing some fireballs each and every day as well, Doug.
And absolutely.
These are inciting words. These aren't First Amendment free speech protected words. When you're effectively seeking to incite violence as a specific reaction, if someone's going to press charges against you, well, I can't tell you with clarity, Doug, why it is the DOJ is not picking up, be it Lindsey Graham, although I think that's perhaps more defensible slightly, or Donald Trump, which is not defensible at all, to my opinion, Doug, because the man is out there inciting violence or seeking to incite violence if he gets charged, and we all suspect he's about to get charged.
I agree with exactly how you just phrased it and how you couched it, because I think what Trump has said is much more dangerous. But what Lindsey Graham said was unconscionable for a sitting senator, somebody who does, after he is elected each time, swears allegiance to support and defend the Constitution. And what does he do the first chance he gets to get a little airtime? He throws out that fireball. And I believe in the First Amendment. I believe we should be able to express all our ideas, with the exception of yelling fire in a crowded auditorium, right? But there has to be, and I'm no lawyer, and I just wish there was somebody that had a clearer answer about whether or not what Lindsey Graham actually crossed the line and could be charged.
Doug, let me ask you, as a lawyer, Lindsey Graham is a JAG officer.
Exactly. Right.
So he is effectively an attorney in the military, and that would set him up for a differing standard of service. Not only has he, as a U.S. senator, pledged an oath to the U.S. Constitution, but also as an officer in the military, and above and beyond that, he is an officer of the court as a JAG officer.
Yeah, but he's also a politician, and it's not the first time someone said, oh, if XYZ happens, there's going to be riots in the streets. Well, I share the concern, no doubt, but I mean, come on, it's a call to arms, I guess, in the same way that the Republicans are always prodding their base. But to think that he is actually calling for that out loud and saying, come and attack this country. I mean, it's hyperbole, Doug.
No, that was Doug. Doug, that was Trump at the ellipse on January 6th, actually saying it aloud.
You're going to lose your country versus, if XYZ happens, there's going to be riots in the streets. I have a problem with it, Doug, but it's still free speech.
I didn't mean to imply that he said the way you just explained it. He did not imply that this is exactly what's going to happen if you do this and you do that. The way he said it, he probably protected himself and knows how to do it. But I think it was more of a promise than a threat. And yes, he was a JAG lawyer in the Air Force for 30-some years. I mean, the guy, a long time.
Doug, we prefer the term JAG officer.
Hey, real quick, and thank you, Doug, for the call. And Evan, real quick, Karina, our last call, kind of threw out of left field. Apparently, she was referring to the pharmacist in Wisconsin must now note whether a medication carried a risk to a fetus when meds are sent across state lines. You know, more of that kind of weird action going on. The result of the overturning of Roe v. Wade and all these other laws. So thank you, Karina, for that. Sorry we didn't quite get the grasp of it. Thank you for listening.
Thank you to James Santel. Thank you to everyone that listened today. Don't forget, stick around, because we got Native Roots Radio. Then I believe we got a Up North News podcast with Kirk Bankstead and Pat Kreitlow, although Kirk's on vacation, so who knows what they're playing at 7. Keep her locked. We'll all find out together.
And they weren't there for him, they were there for me.
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.